Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Chris Bryant, hematoma and all, hit a 440-foot homer over the weekend.
I don't know if I've ever seen a guy hit a ball so far with hematoma.
I know. Hematoma.
He's got a hematoma.
It's not a tumor.
And no, that's not funny if you really have one, but listener playing doctor last week, and we got quite the kick out of it.
Yeah, to those who have hematomas, very serious, and we hope that you get the treatment that you need. I didn't know I needed to put that qualifier out there. It was fairly obvious that the caller, was it Frank and Lombard, who...
Dr. Frank.
Yeah, Dr. Frank. He's not exactly a neurosurgeon, I don't think.
I just having heard a handful of his calls over the years, I'm betting against it.
It's just a guess. It's an informed guess, but I don't know for sure. And if he is, I will apologize when he calls in and proves that he is one. To our Phil Mickelson conversation, to how I just felt very disconnected from my fellow sport fan, but more so my fellow sports media brethren, about I thought it obviously should be penalized, but it was not something to take as seriously as so many people did. A texter wrote in, "Life is different for people who actually take some things in life seriously, Parkins. What Phil did was disgraceful." How about that?
Yeah, my advice to you, if you want advice, I don't suspect you want it, and I certainly don't expect you to act on it in this case, so I think I'm just exercising my voice here for no reason, but
yeah.
On a Sunday afternoon when it's Father's Day and, you know, Tom and you are enjoying ribs,
yeah,
keep your phone in your pocket.
For sure. That was not so much the issue. It was just I consume sports, and I was watching the U.S. Open, and they kept talking about it. They were talking about it on Sunday, and it happened on Saturday.
Right.
And I was just like, he's not in contention. What is happening? Show me the golfers. This is not a big deal. And now listen, you could say, hey, I'm talking about it here, but that's what I'm actually genuinely interested in. Where is the disconnect? Why is it why do we have to preach and – golf is a game of respect, and Phil disrespected the great game of golf. What am I missing?
That's always been how people who are affiliated with the game, and not all of them, but a good percentage of them, look at it as though this is something that's different from all other sports, that it's the gentleman's game, that the rules should be adhered to 100% of the time, and anybody who flies in the face of those rules is flat out evil.
Yeah, and by the way, like, as a professional golfer, the rules should be followed. Like, he should have been penalized. He just doesn't need to withdraw and apologize and offend children.
He's hurting children!
It's a disgrace to the game. Like, I'm pretty sure Phil Mickelson's not a disgrace to the game, and if he is, it's because of the insider trading. But in general, it was just... And I don't even like to paint fan bases with broad brushes. Like, there's a lot of people, right now, soccer fans are having their time with the World Cup. And I am casual soccer guy. And if you're hardcore soccer guy, to me, the worst thing that you could do is try to put on the full court press about how do you not love soccer as much as I love soccer?
Yeah.
It's not very becoming. Same thing with hockey fan. Hockey fans sometimes has a tendency to be a little overzealous in selling their sport compared to where it is in American sports fan space. Would you
right.
say that's fair?
I'd say it was fair. I'd say I was guilty of that for a handful of years, beginning when I first started getting regular air opportunities in 88. So 30 years ago, when I was trying to carve out my spot,
sure,
one of the things that I thought distinguished me from other guys who were behind microphones was I did have a passion for the game of hockey.
Sure.
And fans who liked hockey responded to a dangerous Dan on nights on the loop. So
Big Chief Mackhawk.
I ran with it, exactly.
And you should.
But I gave up that waving that flag a long time ago. If they don't want to jump in, the hell with them.
And, but to me, that's the right way to go about it. And also just like a little bit of self-awareness goes a long way. Like, if people mock Cubs fans for not knowing the score, or just being there for the party and the pretty girls in the bleachers and having some beers, like, yeah, there are a lot of those out there.
So what? They go to every ballpark in the country. It's not exclusive to the one at 1060 West Addison.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I just don't understand why that would offend you at all. Like, as a member of the Cubs fan, you know, whatever. Like, yeah, absolutely. Notre Dame fan. If you ever get the tag or the shot at, man, those elitist Notre Dame fans, like, yeah.
Yeah, that's what we are.
Yeah. You've got a bunch of religious statues around campus with making football symbols, touchdown Jesus, and this guy's doing a first down symbol and all of that. Like, yeah, it's a little smug. It's okay to acknowledge that.
I have not experienced, as you have, that same high level of preachy that you're saying comes from soccer fans.
Oh, I think that soccer fan is, because it's, when is soccer going to catch on in the U.S.? When is soccer going to be as popular in the U.S. as it is everywhere else in the world? It's the world's game. And I dealt with it a lot in Kansas City because the MLS team is so popular and they've got a season ticket waiting list. So maybe I saw it more there than you would have seen it here.
Yeah, probably.
But it was, I mean, very prevalent. Why aren't you guys talking about it more? I was like, well, listen, there's stadium holds 18,000. They do 0.1 shares on TV.
Right.
So it tells me that there's maybe like 22,000 of you that are out there that are diehard and passionate about it. And that's great. Like, good for
Enjoy
you.
Yourselves.
Enjoy yourselves. I always have fun at the game. However, it's not the Chiefs. It's not the Royals. It's not KU basketball. And the numbers bear that out.
I know two guys who regularly are behind microphones in town who love soccer. Mike Mulligan from our morning show, Mully and Hanley, and Fred Huebner up the dial a little bit. They both have an enormous depth of knowledge on the sport and passion for it. Neither of them, at least based on what I've heard them say or seen them tweet or Facebook or whatever, is trying to shove it down your throat. Neither.
Yeah, and by the way, like, the sport doesn't really need it. They're investing a lot in U.S. soccer, and it's wildly popular, obviously, around the globe, and the World Cup's coming here. And so, like, if the team gets good, people will get on board.
Well, and everybody likes it as a kid because you get Capri Sun after every game.
And we all played it. We all played soccer, so we have some little point of entry into it. But it's kind of funny, actually.
I'm glad I missed that boat. Nobody was playing soccer in the 60s.
I never played soccer as a kid outside of gym class.
But they had it in your community, didn't they?
Yeah, they had it. They had like tri-county soccer or whatever the heck it was. And
I guess shortly after you can walk, you're playing soccer these days. Kids are playing soccer at 4 and 5 years old.
Yeah.
Right? You probably did.
I played at a very, very young age. Yeah. I did not really like it because basketball was my favorite sport, and so I hated that it was about the size of a basketball, roughly. It's like, I can't pick it up. I was like, I can't shoot it into this. I don't understand. So it was not my favorite game, but, you know, it was fun. Play with your friends, run around.
What did you think of Joe Buck doing U.S. Open golf over the weekend?
I think that Joe Buck gets a lot of criticism, most of which is undeserved, but I thought that Fox overall had a very rough weekend. I thought that they had a very rough weekend. They had their audio board go out for like 15 minutes during Friday's telecast. They had crowd mics that were everywhere that picked up a bunch of stuff that wasn't golf noise. Like, you heard every, you know, New York golf snob fan yelling out, mashed potatoes, Baba Booey, get in the hole.
And you hear that every weekend, though.
This was, it struck me as,
nothing wrong with a Baba Booey on a Saturday afternoon either.
Love a good Baba Booey. But they had to issue an apology because it made awful announcing. I did not see it live, but two guys in a crowd mic that was away from the tee box were talking about like some graphic sexual acts.
Really?
Yeah, and like it was X-rated, and Joe Buck just goes, Brooks Koepka's second.
Oh my.
Like, no acknowledgement in the moment whatsoever. So like they were just picking up things like when Brooks Koepka's in the fairway.
See, that'll get viewership up.
Yeah.
That'll get more people watching. I agree with you on Buck. I think he might be the most unnecessarily overcriticized sports figure in the country. Certainly as a broadcaster, I see more vitriol thrown in his direction than any other broadcaster. And I don't get it. If you don't like his style,
he's had some bad moments, but anyone in that high profile of a spot, like I think he overreacted in the moment to Randy Moss mooning the crowd at Lambeau. Like I do think that.
Yeah, he might have
a shameful and disgusting act. We apologize for it airing on our airwaves. Like I think that was overstating it. But for the most part, I think he's pretty good. I think he's been really good in some big moments. And the criticisms are very funny. And when he was active on social media for a very short period of time, he did a good job of highlighting it. Yes, that one was over the top. Every fan base feels the same way, that he's biased against them.
They do.
So what does that tell you about his biases?
Yeah, he's not supposed to say a nice word about the opponent ever. He's only supposed to sing the praises of your team.
Yeah, when Madison Bumgarner was setting World Series records, like, it was the story. It felt reasonable that he was talking about Madison Bumgarner.
Yeah.
He did the same thing for the Cubs.
Well, and he does a ton of Packers games because the Packers for many years have been better than the Bears, so they're going to get the number one team when they're on Fox. They're going to get Buck and Aikman.
Yeah.
And there are going to be occasions when Aaron Rodgers' performance is going to warrant high praise. Joe Buck just happens to be the guy who's delivering the message, so a lot of Bears fans will get their gills all flared up over that unnecessarily.
Yeah, if Aaron Rodgers was on the Bears and he was having those great games, Packers fans would think that he had a big market bias towards the Chicago quarterback about the little upstart Green Bay Packers.
Yes.
He's the but this, I know you will disagree with this, I don't think that Nance is bad. I don't think that Al Michaels. I think for the most part, the guys who are at the absolute top of that profession, Al Michaels, Mike Tirico, Jim Nance, Bob Costas, Joe Buck, I think they are all wildly talented broadcasters.
I agree with you. And I agree with you even on Nance. I just think he's a colossal weenie.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that he'd be the most fun guy to have a beer with.
A flowery adjective. He's perfect for golf. He's
the best.
If he only did golf, I never would ridicule him, probably. But
I'd never ridicule him either, because I probably wouldn't be watching outside of Augusta is why I wouldn't ridicule him. He is so cheesy. Like, Jim Nance is the cheesiest announcer you can possibly come up with, whether it's Augusta and painting the picture of, like, when you complain about announcers everything being so grand and so perfect and so beautiful, like, Jim Nance is the announcer that I think, to go a little hawk hyperbole here, he's the best ever at painting a picture of something that's just not there.
What do you mean he's not there?
Everything he does, everything
he announces. Is
Augusta
not beautiful?
I'm sure it's beautiful, but to the degree that he goes on it. Like, you're watching a Sunday game, your 3 o'clock AFC game on CBS, and it's as if, like, this matchup with Peyton Manning and the Broncos and the Raiders is the greatest matchup in NFL history. You, like, can't live in it. Like, everything in that moment is the greatest we've seen of all time right then and there. Just
He's
because
right.
Jim Nance is on it.
He's right. Yeah, that's exactly how I feel when I'm watching Jim Nance. A dozen or so years ago, the first time he broadcast NFL football from the new Ford Field in Detroit, I thought they were going to have to towel him off after the open.
He's a very positive
this
guy.
This building is just sparkling, isn't it, Phil? Oh, shut up and do the game.
He loves his job. See, this is the over negativity of it. The, yeah, is he milk toast? Yes, and the rumor has it he loves burnt toast. But he's just the guy that is happy to be at the games. The guy's job is he could go Super Bowl into Masters into Final Four.
I'm not
Four.
Questioning his job. It's an awesome job.
Or Final, like, Four into Masters.
Right. Like, that's a great, what is it, 3 months that separate the
so
Super
he should
Bowl
love his job. He should be positive.
That's fine with loving his job, but you can also be a little more honest with it. Like, not everything's the greatest be-all, end-all, best day of your life type of thing with him. And I just, he is so cheesy to me. Like, I like Al Michaels a lot. I like a lot of national broadcasters, frontline broadcasters a lot. But that guy's corniness is just beyond, so far beyond what any other announcer goes out there. And like Final Four, I always think of his cheese ball moment a couple of years ago when Villanova
won. I wouldn't script the calls. Yeah, I'm with you. I would.
Weirdo.
Yeah.
I agree with Shep on Al Michaels. No one will ever accuse him of being overly flowery with anything, especially venues he's at. When the Bears had their 1 year when they were displaced in Champaign, it was 0-1. Was that 0-1? 0-1 or 0-2?
0-2, I believe.
0-2. They're in Champaign, and they did have the Monday night game against the Packers down there, and Al was complaining about hotel rooms in the Champaign area. They couldn't even find a two seasons, let alone a four seasons.
Don't get me wrong. Like
but that was funny to me.
That's funny to me too. I'm just, my only point was, I think they're all good at their job. That one could be more likable than the next or whatever, but the amount of hate that level of exposure brings to all of them is out of proportion based on how actually good they are at their job.
I would concur. I don't feel as strongly, and I don't like Nance either, but I'm not as rough on him as Shep over there, but I understand why he doesn't like it. It's far too syrupy. It is just, it's soup so thick you got to eat it with a spoon or a fork, rather.
I think it's the
fork. Yeah, with a fork. Yeah. If it's super,
I get my
cliche.
It would be a normal soup if you ate it with a soup.
Ish.
Eat soup with a soup or spoon? We're getting all tongue twisted here.
It doesn't matter.
It's a cheesiness of Jim Nance that led us that way, though. And it's
that's true. We will blame it on him. The Washington Capitals coach, Barry Trotz, he's up out of there, Mac. Barry Trotz informed the organization today of his decision to resign as head coach of the Capitals. We are obviously disappointed by Barry's decision, but would like to thank Barry for all his efforts the past 4 years and for helping bring the Stanley Cup to Washington. Barry is a man of high character and integrity, and we are grateful for his leadership and for all that he has done for our franchise.
Barry Trotz and his wife have a big challenge at home with a child. I don't know if his stepping away has anything to do with it, but certainly a guy who forever on the Beltway is going to be regarded in nothing but high esteem because he guided the Capitals to their franchise's first Stanley Cup. And he seems to be a very likable guy, so I wish him the best in his retirement, if that's what he chooses to do, especially if that's the reason he's choosing to do it. He has a very severely autistic child.
That news update, by the way, brought to you by Hotels.com. With Hotels.com, get rewarded from seaside cabins to resorts. For every 10 nights you stay, you get one free. Hotels.com, you do you and get rewarded. Free nights don't include taxes and fees. We're McNeil and Parkins on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN, Matt Viskurgin's son, an oversharer.
Yeah, I wonder how the Bristolians took that last night or today when informed about the potty talk that was going on Sunday Night Baseball. Not something that's very often received well.
He would tell you all about how he poops in the shower.
Honestly, anything to get a little bit of social media buzz for their Sunday Night Baseball broadcast.
Does that do it, talking about the pooping habits of youngsters?
I missed it, and I'm on there quite a bit, but the ratings for Sunday Night Baseball continue to plummet, even with their high-priced A-Rod hire. So I don't know if there's anything that they could do to make a regular season baseball game relevant on the national level. Like, I don't know if it exists.
Well, I don't know how much at this point in the calendar people want to watch out-of-town baseball. I think they probably prefer watching their own teams unless, you know, you get a chance to watch Mike Trout because you normally don't. Maybe you take advantage of that opportunity. But even then, we've talked about this before. Mike's not a very exciting guy away from baseball because I don't know. So I don't know how big of a draw he really is.
But there's really no one that gets you. I mean, baseball, no one else's local team was playing then. Like Sunday Night Baseball, every other game is during the day. It's a standalone, nationally televised game. But the sport is just not conducive to watching out-of-market baseball in the regular season. It's just not. If you're a hardcore baseball fan, you're watching your team play. If you're a casual baseball fan, you're watching your team play just less. Like, there's so much inventory of your team that it's really hard to get people to watch Mets-Phillies if you're from Chicago.
Yeah. All right, let's stay on the media beat, shall we?
Sure.
Danny Parkins likes Jim Nance. He likes Joe Buck. He likes Alex Rodriguez. You've talked about this in the past. Your fondness for A-Rod, the broadcaster A-Rod.
So listen, I'm a broadcast dork. I could give you negatives of all of those high-level broadcasters, pros and cons. But in general, I don't think that there is someone that has a top-of-the-network perch that doesn't deserve it. As for A-Rod, man, it is hard to be that natural and comfortable on television. It's just a difficult thing to do. And I don't know if it's because he's been in the public life and spotlight since he was 18 years old, but that guy is remarkably comfortable on television. And I think he has a very high baseball IQ. I think it's better in on Fox's studio coverage for sure, because I've only seen him now. Cubs have been on Sunday Night Baseball, what, two or three times this year? I think twice.
And he's at least twice.
Yeah, he's fine. But I thought when he was on the studio stuff with Frank Thomas, and it was Pete Rose, and then it was Keith Hernandez, and with Kevin Burkhart, I think A-Rod's the best person on that panel by far.
I probably consume enough of it to have a real educated opinion, but for the most part, I think that's a much easier thing to do, is transition from athlete to studio host. Or just as a guest, it's a lot more conversational. It takes a while to develop those skills when you're sitting next to a play-by-play person. And in this case, they have a three-person booth, which always makes it awkward because sometimes one might be a little bit hesitant to give the other an opportunity. Or you get, as we used to get with Monday Night Football, guys fighting for mic time.
Correct.
And that becomes a traffic jam because you don't need it on television. You can see what's happening.
Yeah, three-man booths or co-ed booths in the case of Jessica Mendoza on Sunday Night Baseball. It's a lot of people talking over each other, and it's tough to find your lane, especially if they're both from the player perspective. Like, it's a little easier if one is a manager and one is a player, because then the manager can talk more strategy and the player can talk more about the skill set. But I do think that there is some redundancy there in the Sunday Night booth. But in general, like if A-Rod had, and they've talked about how they were going to do some sort of ESPN series with him talking to people about controversy off the field and on the field and the mental side of the game. Like if they did a hitting series with A-Rod, and it was a 6-part hitting series, and they were in a batting cage or during batting practice, and it was A-Rod and Chris Bryant, A-Rod and Aaron Judge, A-Rod and Joey Votto, and it was six of the best hitters in the world all talking through hitting with Alex Rodriguez, I would absolutely watch that. But he could be the best broadcaster in the history of the sport, and I don't think that he could move the needle to get the ratings to go up for Sunday Night Baseball.
You might be right.
I just don't think it exists.
Yeah. You recall my comments when we argued about, we didn't argue, but we debated A-Rod's strengths, weaknesses, maybe a month or so ago. Do you remember what I said about him?
No.
Too flowery. And I think this is just a guess on my part.
Okay.
But Alex Rodriguez is not a dumb guy. He's never struck anybody as being dumb.
Not at all.
He's aware of the fact a lot of people flat out don't like him. A lot of his contemporaries didn't like him. There might be guys playing the game today who don't like him. So what do you do to change that? You say lots of nice things about people. And that was the case last night with Cubs right fielder Jason Hayward, who apparently has more of a talent for not swinging at pitches than anyone else in the game. We got a couple of samples of the action for you.
Full count, 3 balls and 2 strikes. There go the runners. And it's ball 4 to Hayward.
The pitch was a slider, and Hayward, again, like the 1-2 take, this take is even better. Human beings should not be able to take this pitch.
Are you serious? Human beings should not be able to take this pitch, but Jason Hayward, his eye is more special than mere mortals.
It was a hell of a take.
That was a great take. I wonder, when we talk to Hawk Harrelson later in the week, we'll see if Hawk knew somebody who was the most natural pitch taker during his 60 years in baseball.
Here's my question for you on, because you seem like you and Shep are on the same page with that, right? Nance is too flowery, too complimentary. A-Rod, too complimentary. Who is the broadcaster that is the appropriate amount of critical? Who is that person?
Play-by-play-wise, Al Michaels comes to mind for me. because when a game sucks, he's not afraid to mention that, well, this is a disaster. And now, like, I think of the Trestman game in Green Bay a few years ago on Sunday night where it's like 42-0 at halftime. And he's just, well, here's the story of why the clock set 5 minutes in advance in Green Bay, because Lombardi times five showing up 5 minutes early. And that's what you get when it's 42-0. And that's what I'm going to give you.
Yeah.
Like, stuff right. like that. Like, he plays into when there's a dog of a game. He's not afraid to tell you that, yep, this sucks, and here's how I'm going to try to attempt to make it better.
No question. Al Michaels is a made guy. He talked about gambling when they told him not to talk about gambling. He'll tell you the game sucks when they want you to sell the game. Al Michaels is a made man. All right. He's also a Hall of Famer, right? He's arguably the best broadcaster to ever do it. All right, next.
First of all, Shep, what I remember about that 42-0 Bears deficit at the half was hoping to God Cutler would come out and start the second half. Come on, I want to see more of them. Throw another pick six there. Please, please give me more Jay Cutler. Troy Aikman doesn't soft soap it. Troy Aikman will give it to you if you got it coming.
Okay. I don't hear a lot of criticism when I watch these games in general. Like, I just...
No.
I just don't. And I'm with you guys. I would absolutely like more of it. But so many of them are playing the relationship game. They don't want to step on a toe. They've got these really cush jobs. They don't want to lose it. I mean, Boomer Esiason will do it on the studio show, on CBS's studio show.
Yeah.
He will swing a hammer.
Yeah.
Radio-wise as well, he'll do it Monday Night Football.
Yeah, and Boomer is fantastic at it, but many people don't feel like they are made men enough to be legitimately critical in those positions.
I think it falls more on the analyst than it does the play-by-play man, too.
Yeah, but they also are players who know how tough it was. It's a really tough thing to do, right? For you and me, okay, we can sit here and mock, oh, wow, that's the greatest take ever. But A-Rod, who's had a 88-mile-an-hour slider buckle in on the knees on a 3-2 count, and knows how tough that is to actually take when you and I have no idea how tough it is.
Speak for yourself, buddy!
Yeah, no, you've been in the box. You've had your hand in the dirt. You've been on the T-box. You're a world-class athlete. Well, you know what I mean? It's tough. Like, I understand the human nature from why those guys are like, what am I going to do?
Look, they just start making stuff up as they go sometimes, it sounds like. They have no idea what's going to come out of their mouths, and then just words happen.
No question. What, the greatest take in the history of takes? So that's like Bill Walton back in the day.
Human being should not be allowed to take a pitch like that. Boy, he's got good eyes.
Bill Walton will be like, that was the greatest bounce pass in the history of the Sacramento Kings organization. I was like, really? I don't think you've seen them all, but thanks, Bill, for playing.
I'm pretty sure A-Rod also called. He did a produced piece with Tommy Pham.
Yes, he did.
And he came out of the piece and he called him Johnny.
Did he really?
I'm pretty sure of it, yes.
I'm a good enough runner to where if a guy hits a double, I could score, or if he hits a single, I go first to third to help the team out.
All right. Thanks, T. Keep up the great work, man.
Thank you.
You know, I really admire Johnny Pham from afar.
He just spent an afternoon with him and forgot his name. Piece was good because he's talking baseball with a current-day player. The piece on Tommy Pham was actually pretty good.
This hour on The Score brought to you by St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Our review of ESPN Sunday Night Baseball brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. They're making big plans for their 25th anniversary. Get your season tickets now and receive exclusive benefits. A man who knows how tough it is to broadcast a baseball game, Len Casper, will join us at 3 o'clock. I want to talk Addison Russell with him, with you. We had him traded for Manny Machado. Now he's having a good month at the plate. Casper's called him a future MVP. He's good in the field, but then he makes an errant throw last night. Like, Addison Russell is a polarizing player right now, and I want to discuss where we're at with him with Len Casper coming up at 3 o'clock on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
John Smoltz weighing in on Pedro Strop's hat on Fox. The audio, by the way, brought to you by the Timeshare Exit Team. Make this year the last year you get fed up trying to book your timeshare. If it no longer fits your lifestyle, go to timeshareexitteam.com and discover your options for a safe, permanent exit. Timeshareexitteam.com.
I like John Smoltz, typically.
So do I. He's had a little bit more get off my lawn, the state of the game. Like, he's got strong, entrenched opinions, and you can't tell him. Like, he comes across like a guy who should be the czar of baseball. Like, he thinks that he should run the entire sport, which I kind of like.
I don't know if I'd go that far. When you say get off my lawn, would that soundbite that Eli picked for the return qualify?
No.
Because he doesn't like the hat half-cocked on the head of a Pedro Strop?
Not necessarily. Like, he's got a lot of thoughts on the pace of play and launch angle and the way that the game is going and rule changes, and I kind of like that. Even if I disagree with some of them,
yeah.
He reminds me of Jeff Van Gundy in the NBA. Like, Jeff Van Gundy will just... He will pick a little molehill, and he will make a mountain out of it. And he's usually right, but it's not that big of a deal. But like, I was thinking about it during the break. A texter mentioned him. That is a national broadcaster who is 100% willing to be critical. Like
yes, he is.
Jeff, he will criticize. He doesn't really criticize coaches. And so I think Dan Le Batard said this once, and it was a great point. I don't know if there's ever been a coach analyst who has criticized coaches. Like, that fraternity is just so tightly knit, and they're always, if they're analysts, they're like in the back of their mind, they're thinking, well, maybe I could get back in and be a coach again or be on someone's staff as an assistant somewhere.
My mind is racing here, and I got one.
You got one.
Yeah, but it's rare. Brian Billick was with Tom Brenneman in Chicago for a game when Lovie Smith took a penalty, or did he? Boy, he wound up refusing to take the lead, is what happened. Shep, help me with this.
It was the Calvin Johnson game, I believe.
Was it the game against the Lions?
Because it was early, I want to say fourth quarter, and
the field goal was good and gave the Bears a lead, if I remember right, but there was a penalty on the Lions that gave the Bears
fourth and goal from
fourth
the one
and goal
or something,
from
they
real short,
with
and they went for it and didn't get it.
Okay.
So they took points off the board.
And crushed Lovie?
And Brian Billick said, I don't know if I've ever seen a coach refused opting to take the lead before.
Okay.
Well, that's not super critical,
no.
But he said it was odd because it was.
Okay.
Usually you'll settle for the lead.
Well, that's one. And Brian Billick has talked about loving the TV lifestyle. Like, some coaches have done that, like Bill Cowher. Don't think he'll ever get back into coaching. Tony Dungy. But those guys, so much of their value comes from the fact that they're still linked to those
right.
jobs.
Yes.
That they still don't criticize coaches.
It's a very tightly knit fraternity. On occasion, Gruden would pull the trigger, but not very often.
Pretty rare.
And I'm told it's much more fun to watch video with Gruden than to listen to him on national television describing video, because one of his favorite words for a guy who is a bit of a slappy is one of my favorite words.
Oh.
And the first part of it is slap.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Every 5 seconds, that's flying out of his mouth, so to speak.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. I did not know that. Because the criticism of Gruden was that he loved everything. What was the thing that the Bears did that got Gruden to actually be critical? And it was just so damn startling. It was in the last couple of years. I apologize. I remember it from. It was a big thing because, like, John Gruden would not criticize anyone for anything at any time. He loved it. I love this guy, man. This guy. And
yeah.
He's going to be a sixth-round quarterback. But there was something that
this guy.
Yeah, this guy. This guy's got to be great. There was something that the Bears did. The texters will remind me of it, I'm sure. That was so offensive to his football sensibilities that he actually broke out the criticisms of it.
Was it something with Aaron Cromer? After the Cromer report came out a couple of years ago of all the locker room stuff that he had done and leaked the story.
That might have been it.
Was it defending Cromer or actually burying Cromer? I forget which it was.
Probably burying Cromer if he was actually critical in that way. Because I remember being like, man, the Bears actually figured out a way to make John Gruden critical and negative about the NFL. Because it was a real rarity that he was able to do it. And I am fascinated, by the way, because that's a guy that the broadcast gig helped him tremendously make a ton of money and not burn any bridges.
Yes, it did. And I will miss him on Monday Night Football, but I already had been missing him because he wasn't nearly as compelling with Sean McDonough as he was with Mike Tirico. I thought that was a much more comfortable partnership.
Yeah, I think he didn't like McDonough. And it came across.
It did kind of come across. I think he just got into such a good rhythm with Mike that maybe it just didn't feel right for him. I don't know.
But it's funny, like those guys, so much of their value comes from the allure that they're still candidates to go back and coach. You know, like John Gruden would be linked to the Colts job, and we'd ask about him for the Bears job, and he'd be linked to every opening that would come around, and then he would get more and more money from ESPN, and then finally one day he's like, well, I'm making $7 million a year from ESPN, so to get me back to coaching, you'd have to give me $10 million a year.
Okay, here's 10.
And the Raiders did it. I was like, my God.
10 over 10. He'll never live that out. You know he won't last 10 years.
No chance. Way. And, I mean, if he wins a Super Bowl, it's worth it, but other than that, you're grossly overpaying for a head coach who feels like he's stuck in the 90s with some of his football thoughts.
Well, if he wins, there's nothing wrong with those thoughts. We'll see if he wins.
No, I agree. But I would bet against him winning to live up to that contract.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah?
I have no issues with coaches earning that much money. I think it's about time. You look at how much money is given to the guys on the field in the uniforms, and of all the sports where a coach makes a difference and a coach sets a tone, the NFL, are you kidding?
I agree.
There's and finally, the assistants are paid the way they should be.
I mean, in all sports, especially yes. ones with salary caps, there's no excuse if you are a profitable, winning, big market organization to not pay top dollar for your coaches. Like, if you think that coaching makes a difference, it's one of my biggest criticisms of the Bulls was when they had the falling out with Tibbs, and then they let Ron Adams leave before, and now where's Ron Adams wind up? As the top assistant coaching the Warriors under Steve Kerr to how to be defensive. I was like, you let one of the best assistant coaches in the NBA go over a squabble over nothing, whether it was a couple hundred grand or power or credit or whatever it ended up being, like, spend your money when it doesn't count against your salary cap on ways to benefit your team. You're the most profitable team in the damn league.
Yeah, that's true.
Randy Brown, Pete Myers, these guys, that it's all nepotism and incest. I was like, come on.
At the same time, you don't want to, I don't know. I don't suspect you would be of the mindset to keep an assistant coach if it precluded you from hiring the head man that you wanted.
No, not.
Because that would scare some people off.
No question about it. But Adams left before Tibbs left, and it went to pushing Tibbs more out the door.
Yeah.
And I was just like, come on. Spend money on your assistant coaches. Don't just have everybody come up through your coaching internship camp, be former players that are on your staff. Like, that's no way to fill out a coaching staff. Now, it's changed a little bit recently, but, I mean, that was a huge part of my criticism of the 2010 to, like, 14 Bulls run.
I'm told it slowly has changed in the last couple years, but that has been a huge problem if you want to take it to the college level at the University of Illinois. It is very difficult to get an assistant football coach at a school that is not willing to pay what other big-time programs are paying.
Assistant coach salaries is a huge part of college sports all across the country. Len Casper, we'll talk all about Cubs-Cardinals, look ahead to the Dodgers series. He was part of the radio broadcast, so we'll welcome him into the broadcasting conversation. But I really want to talk to him about the value of Addison Russell now, the perception, where he is going forward. He'll have thoughts. It's next on The Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly.